Welcome to the Working Dog Depot Podcast with your hosts, Rich Harden and Howard Young.
All right, Howard Young, man. Season 2, Episode 1. We made it a year.
We did. We made it a year. 28 episodes. I will have to say that we are long overdue. This is probably the longest dry spell, and just because life has happened, but pressure's on.
That didn't help anything either. So I was sick for a while, guys, so sorry, and had no voice and took a little bit to get back. So,
but we've had a very busy few weeks. We did have Eric Stanbro here last week for his e-collar class. You know, his episode is by far the most popular one that we've done, and it was a good class. It was good. I was very proud of my teams. I felt like they did a tremendous job. They certainly didn't embarrass me. Their obedience was good. Their outwork was good. They had good control. Even the ones that I thought would be kind of jackasses were actually very good.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Glad you guys had a good week, a good weekend. 3-day course?
It was 3 days, and it was during the week rather than on a weekend. I think we would have had probably some more civilian participants had it been on a weekend, because there were some folks that expressed interest that couldn't come because of work. But
well, maybe you get a part two.
No, I was really glad to have my guys there, most of my guys. So tonight we have a gentleman that I have been seeing on social media and really kind of liked. I liked the videos that I've seen, and as fate would have it, he was presenting at HITS. So I got an opportunity to sit on his class, and I would like to introduce everybody to Eric Good.
Hey, Eric, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, it's taken us about 3 tries to make this happen, and no fault of yours. It's all been on our end. You've been very amenable to us and come on. So I'm glad that we finally are getting this done.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thanks for your patience and welcome.
Rich, you want to ask your standard question?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Eric, I ask everybody the same thing, is, you know, how did you get into dogs, man?
So police work led me into dogs. I, as a patrolman, I wanted to be like the canine guys that were out getting bailouts and chasing cars, tip of the spear, always getting into the good stuff. And that steered me towards canine. Was very fortunate. I got picked 3 years on. A couple people left and was lucky to get the spot. That led me into dogs. So just the work, the excitement of police work.
Now, where are you located for those that don't know you?
So I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We're about 30 minutes north of Miami.
Okay, awesome. All right, Fort Lauderdale Police Department, the city, county?
Yeah, city of Fort Lauderdale Police Department.
Nice, yes. Nice. What about your dog teams? How many dog teams you guys got there?
We have about 20 dog teams overall. We're all single purpose. So my unit is single purpose criminal apprehension. And we're allotted for 8 spots right now. We have 7. But yeah, otherwise we have detection dogs, single purpose narcotics, single purpose bomb dogs. We have a therapy dog, all that stuff. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's kind of unusual, isn't it? Single purpose like that?
Yeah, it's pretty unusual. The sheriff's office down here does the same thing. I got to be honest, I love it. I think it's the way to go. If you have a big enough agency and you can do it, sure, it's definitely better. You can concentrate on one thing and be better at one. But yeah, I mean, I understand why a lot of agencies don't do it. It's not financially feasible for some smaller agencies to do it.
Well, you definitely hit the nail on the head. I think it all boils down to money and priorities, for sure. I do think that it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a drug dog that's trained to bite people searching people. So, you know, like our single purpose drug dogs search people and they find drugs in spots that we wouldn't have found if we were searching them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one benefit. But there's many more that, you know, those guys get a lot of time to train just on their detection work. And that's important. It's not prefer patrol and, you know, the detection kind of slacks a little bit or vice versa. But you can be an expert in one category.
Nice.
For sure.
What's your percentage rate with the dogs as far as, you know, application to detection, apprehension?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, we do get a lot of work. Our bomb dogs right now are crazy busy. We got a new soccer stadium our drug dogs, you know, have always been busy. And then our criminal apprehension dogs, we had a lull. We were a little slow the last couple of years, but I'd say the last 6 months or so, it's definitely picked up again. And we're deploying every night. We get a couple calls every night for sure. We mostly all work at night, but
nice. So what is, just for, what's the agency size or population you serve?
So we have about 550 sworn officers. That's wow. That's how big our agency is. As far as population, I think we're about 150,000, but we swell to about 300,000. I could be off on these numbers a little bit during the day because we have a lot of people that commute into the city to work.
Gotcha. It's a lot of folks.
Yeah. It's a lot of people in a small area.
Nice.
Yeah. So Mark Plunks was here last week.
Awesome.
And it's funny. I was watching a video on your Facebook page today, and you had on a shirt, one of his company shirts that he.
Yeah.
And I got one last week, and it's very nice, very comfortable. But I spotted the logo right away.
Yeah, that logo is awesome. I love it because it doesn't scream police canine or military. Yeah. You know, you can wear it, and the people who know, but it's not like a police canine shirt. So. He really nailed it with that. But yeah, I've known Mark a long time. My dad was actually an officer with Fort Lauderdale, and Mark worked at our jail initially and used to ride with my dad. And then funny story. So when Mark's in K-9, I used to call him for advice all the time. And then his son was interested in becoming a cop. And then his son started riding with me. And now his son got hired with the agency he worked for and is a K-9 officer as well. So it's funny how it all comes full circle. And
sure.
Yeah. But great guy, great trainer.
Yes. Yep. I was really pleased that he made the trek up here, and we had a good time getting to know each other. That's good. Mentors. Who do you have a mentor or mentors?
Yeah. I mean, my main mentor is, he's like my best friend now. He was, the guy that I did a ride along first cop. I was going to school to be an engineer and wasn't really enjoying it. And my dad set me up with a ride along with this guy. His name's Mark Renner, and got in a couple car chases, had a bailout or two. And I left there with my head on a swivel. I had no idea what I was looking for, but just had a blast. And that hooked me to become a cop. I love being out at night. I love the driving fast and, you know, breaking the rules, running the stop signs and making U-turns all night. I got hired. And then when I went to K-9, he was the trainer in K-9. So he trained me in K-9. So just a really well-rounded cop. I mean, phenomenal cop, had a great head on his shoulders. And I learned a ton from him about canine work and, you know, just the common sense stuff about being a dog handler, being out on the street and how to catch bad guys, you know, with your mind a little bit and doing things right. He was never a big guy into training. He was the trainer because no one else was doing it. And he did a good job, but he just never like dove into that. Training was a means to an end for him. You know, it was, we had to train to work our dogs out on the street.
Sure.
And so, you know, we trained to whatever we needed to do on the street, and that was it. But yeah. So
what age guy? How old is he?
So he's early 50s. So he's about 12 years older than me.
I'm curious, is it possible that he has maybe written an article or two that would have been in Dog Sport magazine years ago?
I don't think so.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
That name just sounded familiar to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was a big mentor for me for the police department and K-9 and all that. And then I've had a lot of trainers around me that I've learned a ton from, you know, that I've been very fortunate to be around some very gifted trainers, and they shared their knowledge with me, and, you know, I've been able to pass it down and share it with others. So,
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good trainers down here in South Florida, a lot of good canine teams. I don't know what it is or why, but South Florida has always been known for, you know, at least in my head, maybe I'm wrong, but for good canine teams.
It's the weather. Nobody wants to train where it's cold, man. Come on.
Yeah, we get to train all the time. Yeah.
Well, sure. Dog sport is very big there, too. That was really where I'd made some treks in the early 90s down to Homestead, Florida, when I was in working in Schutzen, and there were some very big names down there at the time, that Godfrey Dildai and Phil Holscher. Yeah. Tony Guzman was still, he was active in that as well. And so, yeah, there's always been a hotbed of dogs for sure. And folks involved in the sport. And as it turns out, police work as well.
Yeah.
So some of the videos that I've watched, I know that you have embraced, as we all have, even us knuckle dragger cavemen have embraced condition reinforcers and markers. So there's that aspect that I know you've delved into. But what I saw or what I heard you speak about at HITS, I'd kind of like for you to go over, because you were utilizing a fence or portion of a fence, and you can kind of go through that process of what that's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we call it the bark fence. And so what we're going to do is we're going to elicit the dog into barking. And what the barking does, you know, it's hard to get people to stop thinking, well, why am I teaching my dog to bark? Well, what does the barking do? The barking is going to create some emotions in the dog. And we want to make these emotions meaningful. And we want to carry those emotions into when the dog goes into fight or into any behavior we want him to do. So we can bring out these emotions through the barking and then carry that over and make that a precursor for the bite. So it becomes a predictor before the bite. And then those emotions carry over into the bite. So, but going back just a little bit, it's all going to start with keeping the dog quiet and prey and making sure you have a clean out. For me, that's really important. Like you said, with the markers, I want to make sure that the dog knows he can bite when I tell him he can bite, or he can get the toy when I tell him he can get the toy. When I tell him to let go, he's got to let go. To me, that makes a lot of clarity in that when I tell you to do it, you're all in. But when I tell you to stop, you're all out. And I think you can generate a lot of power just in that alone. But going back to the barking, I want to make sure the dog's not barking in prey drive first, which is something that we see and something that a lot of our dogs have been reinforced for doing overseas at the kennels. There's a dog tied out, and then there's a decoy standing out in front, moving side to side, making prey movements, and the dog's just barking, 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 barking. If you think about it, it's an unnatural state for the dog. The dog should be quiet, should want to stalk the prey so that he can get to it so it doesn't run away. So I want to make sure the dog's quiet and prey, so I'm going to quiet him up there. And that's going to bring a lot of clarity. When the dogs are barking and prey, they're in that unnatural state, you're never going to have clarity. The dogs are just bouncing all over the place. Their wires are arcing in their head. Their mind is not right. So quieting the dog up for me is the first thing. So we got to do that before we move into the barking, in my opinion. And then we want to make the barking on command. So it's not just random barking. We want rhythmic, strong, powerful barking. In the beginning, it might be like we talked about, a little bit of prey barking, which is, you know, undulating and rawr, 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 you know, different tones, no cadence, no strength behind it. But through markers, we're going to mark the behaviors that we want to see more of. We might get two or three rhythmic, strong barks. We're going to mark that and pay that and then bring out more and more of those real rhythmic, strong barks. It happens very fast, usually in, you know, a session or two, and the dogs are barking really nice. So, you know, with this whole system, you know, there's so many benefits to it. It's like, to me, it's a replacement for line agitation. I don't know if you guys ever did line agitation or still do. You know, to me, line agitation was, that's how we used to build aggression in dogs. If looking back at it, we were teaching the dogs to bark in prey drive. That's what we were doing. And like I said, unnatural. So here, when we put the barking on command, they're not barking in prey drive. They're barking initially at a passive civil decoy. So somebody in shorts and a t-shirt, because we're in South Florida, shorts and a t-shirt laying on the ground in the fetal position, they're going to start barking at that from the beginning. And that's going to make it's going to make them bring that decoy alive. So the decoy does nothing, offers nothing. The barking brings him alive, and then he gets to bite him. So you're getting that civil engagement right from the start. You're getting passive engagement right from the start. With that comes team neutrality. So I don't know if you've seen some of the videos. We have the three-sided bark fence with the dog back tied behind it. The fence is about 3 feet tall. And we'll put decoys in bite suits inside of the bark fence. And so the dog can reach these decoys, but he knows through a couple repetitions that he needs to focus on that guy that's laying there and doing nothing, wearing no equipment, and bark at him, and he's not allowed to bite these guys in bite suit. And so we're making that focalization, focus on him, bark at him, you get to bite him. not these guys that are in here in bite suits. So that creates a team neutrality that's really nice. You know, out on the street, and I've had this problem with my dogs. You know, my dog's agitating on someone. If an officer gets too close while he's agitating on someone and he can't get to him, there's always that possibility that the dog may redirect on that person. Well, here, if they're not biting the guy in the bite suit that's right next to them, they're probably not going to bite your backup out on the street. They're target focused. We have the dogs barking through the decoy's legs, tracking the decoy through the, you know, the suit pants, and he's barking, you know, right below the guy's crotch. It's kind of scary, but you know, the dogs just know I don't bite this guy. I bark at that guy, and that's how I get what I want. So going back to the emotions. So while the dog's barking, he's feeling powerful, strong, feeling frustration, maybe some hatred. We'll put some social pressure on him. So meaning I'll be face to face with him with a fence in between us and staring right in his eyes, blowing on him, you know, maybe showing my teeth, kind of making it somewhat threatening in their language. Whether that works or not, I don't know. I do it. But so make him feel a little bit threatened, and we'll get some nastier barks out of it. So when you're face to face like that, and he's like, oh, you get those three or four real guttural nasty barks, boom, mark that and pay that. And the next thing you know, the next session, you know, we have eight of those barks in a row, and then we pay that. And he goes, this is the kind of barking when I really get nasty, forward aggression, and I put everything I have into it. This is how I get paid. Not just this random barking or rawr, 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 right? So now it's, and let me go back 1 second. So while I'm face to face with the dog, there's a fence in between, right? Which we talked about. That's also creating barrier frustration. Right. So you've seen the videos online of the, you know, one dog on one side of the fence and the other on the other, and they're barking at each other, nasty, looking like they're about to fight. And then the gate rolls open and they're like, oh, that's cool, dude. And now they're like, all right, everything's totally cool. So we're using that a little bit to create some frustration as well. You know, initially we might pay the dog with toys, and then we're going to move into hidden sleeves and prosthetics very quickly. So when the dog does what we want, we'll mark it. Yes, stand up, reach over the fence, pay him with the hidden sleeve or pay him with the prosthetic, right? Meanwhile, the whole inside of the fence is flooded with empty suits, toys, sleeves, all this equipment, right? So we just want the dogs neutral to all that, right? There's a lot of guys out there, and, you know, we've been there, that have equipment fixation problems. So this just completely neutralizes them to that, neutralizes them to the backups as well. But we want to create that emotion going into the bite. So at the bark fence, the dog's going to bark, let's say 20, 30, 40 times, and then he's going to bite. So when he goes into that bite, he's going into the bite with everything he has, with his heart and his soul. And he basically, you're getting at the point where, like, anything you stick behind that fence, you're frustrating him so much, he's going to hammer it, right? That's what we want. When we have that, we're going to teach him that you're going to bark, and then after barking comes biting every single time. Barking leads you to biting. Bark, 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 bite. Bark, 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 bite. You guys tracking so far? Any questions?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Keep rolling, man.
Now, I know this, it took a little while for me to wrap my brain around it, being a little slow. But so I know sometimes it can be a little confusing. So I try to break it down the best I can, but
wait. So you're doing a really good job of breaking it down. So, you know, I've been out of law enforcement for a while. Me and Howard's talked about this, but bad guys don't pop whips and move side to side. They run and hide. And our dog is a location tool. So exactly. If they don't understand how to do this through a passive means in the beginning, then we're going to get those failed engagements that we see all the time over and over and over again.
Right? Exactly.
You're doing a really good job of explaining that. And that's it's I love the system. I haven't seen the fence. I'm about to watch some of these videos, but completely tracking where you are. And I think you just keep rolling, man. Most people miss this. You know, the last couple of departments that I did some consultations with, you know, I even put a dog in a bite suit and just, or a dog, but a guy in a bite suit, put him in a chair, no movement, and dogs didn't engage.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not moving. So perfect example, man. Good job.
Yeah. And going back to first engagements, you know, that you mentioned, this has been like our number one tool to ensure that the dogs are going to engage on the first time. I'm not giving up on muzzles, do lots of muzzles, hidden sleeves, prosthetics, all these tools, right? They're all tools that are going to help us ensure that the dog engages the first time. I want to use all of them, right? I'm not taking one of them and going, oh, he's definitely going to do it. Like, let's do them all, make sure that the dog's going to engage, because we don't have the luxury that we used to have. I know we had a policy that we couldn't deploy our dog, a new dog, we couldn't deploy him on a gun call until he had 4 or 5 bites or, you know, had proven himself on the street. So we can't do that anymore. Now we need new dogs working gun calls early on, right? And the bites aren't coming as frequently as they used to. So we can't wait a year before a new dog can work a gun call, which is not feasible. So we have to do the best we can to make sure that the dog is going to engage on its first time, and not just engage, but do it with real intent to actually engage, and confidence, and to know what his job is, to understand that going in and biting is what we need done here. And, you know, it's all about making that, as you guys know, that bite's got to be shocking to the bad guy to disrupt his plan. It's got to be fast. It's got to be hard. Can't come in and just, you know, barely put teeth on skin. Not going to disrupt the bad guy's plan. So we need to make sure that happens. So this is really helping us get there. So I'm trying to think back where I left off, going back a little bit. Okay, so bark, 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 bite, right? We're teaching the dog that. Meanwhile, we're doing all the neutralization stuff, equipment, backups, commands, right? We put people on the outside of the bark fence in uniform, banging pool noodles and palm fronds and just crazy stuff, making all kinds of noise. You know, police canine, come out, you're going to get bit, given all the commands and stuff that the dog's going to hear out on the street, right? So everyone's screaming that. If the dog looks at these guys, nothing happens. We just wait until he targets the civil decoy. When he targets him, barks at him, then we pay that. So the dog learns to ignore all these distractions that he's going to have out on the road. When you're confronting a guy or you're doing a felony stop, someone else is going to be yelling at him, and your dog's going to turn and look at him if you haven't conditioned him for this. So we're making that focalization there. So we want to make a pattern for the dog. Bark, bark, bark equals bite. So they're going into the bite with the real emotion. So the next step is attaching that to what happens out on the street. How do I get my dog to go in to every bite with that same emotion he is behind the bark fence? Well, we need to take the barking away from the bark fence and generalize it. So now there's a decoy hiding, passive decoy, away from the bark fence. Do an area search. The dog gets the odor in his nose, works that scent cone, pinpoints the guy, sees him. Maybe he's on the other side of the fence the first time. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's just there, but he's passive. We stop the dog, tell him to bark, 15 or 20 barks. Then he goes in and bites. Okay, so what just happened there was the dog is now pairing the odor and the search with the barking with the biting. So now they're all starting to get paired together. We're going to do scenarios the same where now there's no odor. Now it's just visual. Walk the dog in, tell him to target a passive civil guy that's laying there. He looks at him. We tell him to bark, 20, 30 barks, however many barks you want to get. While he's barking, we see what we like. He's barking strong, rhythmically, powerfully. He's super focused on the decoy. Tell him to bite, and he gets to go in and bite. We're marking it with the bite command. So barking's what got him there. When he went in to bite on that passive guy away from the bark fence, he was going in with the same emotion he had in the bark fence, right? Because we're telling him to bark, and those emotions are coming to life. And now we just paired it with, in that scenario, we paired it with the visual part of it. So now when he sees a guy, we tell him to target. That is paired with barking, which is paired with biting, and those emotions, right? We start piecing all these together and doing repetitions of this, and they all become linked. And then they're linked, and the dog knows odor means barking means biting. Now I can take away the barking. I don't need the barking, because when the dog wins the guy and smells him and starts working that scent cone, those emotions that he feels with barking start coming to life, because we've classically conditioned odor to barking, which is also to biting. So now he smells the guy, and as soon as he gets there, he wants to go in and hammer. So if we don't stop him, we keep him moving, he's going to stay in prey drive. He's not going to bark, and he's going to go in and bite with the same emotion that we made behind the bark fence. So that's kind of how we link it all together and make it applicable to the job we do. And then, you know, same thing for a building search, right? Check the door seam. But I mean, the way we used to do it, the dog would check the door seam and give us one bark, and we'd be like, oh, great, pop the door. And the dog, look, he alerted. Now, 20 barks, 30 barks, 10 barks, whatever it is, put him in the right mindset before we pop the door and he gets to go on and bite. So now the dogs are going, and when they hit the right door seam, I mean, it's bark after bark after bark after bark, and it's not just one bark. So it's a little agitation session that's happening right before he gets to go in and bite. So that gets paired together. We pair it with announcements, right? The handler giving their announcements, their warnings, their canine warnings. They all get paired together. And during those warnings, super important that the dog is quiet. And with the barking, so we put the barking on command, on cue, with a verbal cue and two physical cues, which I think make a big difference. So the verbal cue is whatever command you want to use, you know, loud, speak, whatever. The physical cues are going to be pulling back on the dog's harness just an inch, just pulling him away from that prey item or that civil passive decoy, pulling him back just a little bit to frustrate him, and then a tap on the side. So those physical cues, as you guys know, that physical will override the verbal many times, especially when a dog's really focused on something. So we have those cues when we go to take it away from the bark fence, that the dog is going to bark when we tell him to, or when we pull back on the harness and tap them on the side. We have three ways of doing it. Because when you take them away from the bark fence the first time, they don't understand it yet. And then we work on getting the handler further and further away, and the dog starts barking on their own. So we need the dog quiet on command when we tell them to be quiet. So we'll tell them to bark, 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 mid-bark, quiet, and they got to shut up. Right? We'll pay them for being quiet sometimes. Then back to barking, then quiet. So it's really important that you can teach, you know, you can teach both. And it's a lot of times teaching the quiet in the beginning helps, but some dogs that just won't be quiet, teach them to bark and then do the opposite, right? And then they understand the opposite a little bit better. And that's like an old dog training trick I'm sure you guys have heard. You want to teach a dog something, teach them the opposite first and then go back and teach that. So, you know, the quiet is very useful. And, you know, as you know, body cameras and everything out there, all the ring cameras, our announcements have to be loud. They have to be, you know, they have to be heard. They have to be, what's the word I'm looking for? You have to be able to understand them. You can't have a dog barking over you as you're giving these announcements. So keeping the dog quiet is really important. So there are a couple scenarios where the dog is allowed to bark on his own. Otherwise, it's got to be on command. If decoy or the, you know, the bad guy is behind a barrier and the dog can't get to him, he's allowed to bark there. So dog checks the door seam, alerts, you know, guy's back there. He's allowed to bark there on his own. If he's winding the guy or sees the guy and you're moving him towards decoy, as you're moving, he's not allowed to bark there. He should be in prey drive. But if you stop and hold him up and stop his forward movement, then he's allowed to bark there. So those are the spots that are the times I allow them to bark on their own. Otherwise, it's got to be on command.
Thanks. Well, back up just a little bit. You mentioned early, you know, generalizing, you know, the desired outcomes that you want for the dog. So kind of explain what you mean by generalizing to listeners a little bit, and then go from there.
Hey, folks, we're proud to have Hold the Line Canine Conference as a supporter and sponsor of the Working Dog Depot podcast. Joe Lukowski and staff are already securing vendors and presenters for the seminar in April. That's April 9th, 10th, and 11th in a brand new location. That's right, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We are especially excited about that. It's going to cut our travel time in half, and there's nothing like being in the Carolinas in early April. Let's Hold the Line Canine Conference. We're very much looking forward to being there and hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Yeah, so generalization to me is just you teach something in one environment, and then you got to take it. You got to take it to other environments and new situations and make sure that the dog really understands what bark means. You know, the dog understands what bark means when the command, when we're behind the bark fence, because that's where he's been taught and the scenery and everything around him. He understands this is where I bark. But then when we take him away from the bark fence and do a box search or do a building search, the first couple times, tell him to bark and he looks at you like you have two heads because you've never asked him to bark in that new environment.
Very contextual. Before.
Yeah, right. It's contextual. So, and we got to show them the picture. And, you know, I've even gone as far as for some stubborn dogs, taking a little section of fence, bringing that with me and setting that up, you know, outside where the guy's found. And now there's that little fence in between. And then we fade that out, right, just to get the dog barking initially. But usually it doesn't have to come to that. But especially when the dogs, they love to bark. They feel great barking. It makes them feel powerful and strong. And when it's that strong rhythmic barking and not prey barking, on top of it, you know, the endurance that you get out of it, the lung capacity, the endurance, there's nothing else like it. When you go out to do one bark fence session and he's barking 350 times in one session and biting three or four times in between there, that endurance is just going to go through the roof.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I really like it. I see it, Eric, really is just next level training, because we have a good number of people that want to come and visit. So we get access to folks that kind of roll through, and it is alarming the number of dogs that had never been taught to bark for the bite, for one. Mm-hmm. And really presents an issue from my perspective on building searches, because the dog basically has no indication. Right, wrong, indifferent, teaching a dog to bark for the bite is something that I have done for years and years. I see what you're doing as really another level, and I really like it. I'm already kind of, as I was when I was at HITS, I was kind of plotting in my head, because we don't really have a training ground. I'm trying to think, because, you know, this winter we will do some indoor stuff. I actually have more indoor facilities than I do access to outside. I'm thinking about some sort of a portable fence that I could set up.
Yeah, you could make one out of PVC, and you could do it indoors for sure. Yeah, I appreciate the positive feedback. I didn't come up with this. I learned this from a guy named Mike Lorraine, who's a very talented dog trainer in Palm Beach. And I mean, he's next level. He is 100% next level, and just phenomenal dog trainer. I learned it from him, and been able to, you know, pass it down and do it a little differently, do it a little bit my way, you know, like everyone else puts a little twist on their thing. But he's the one who showed it to me for sure. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it came from the sport world, from Greg Dowd.
Yeah,
from his barking stuff. So, and then Mike put the police canine twist on it, and that's been huge. So, yeah, just so many benefits to it. And it's like it's a one-stop shop for everything. You know, I mean, the other day, one of the trainers that I'm working with came up with a great idea, and he goes, you know, I got a dog that has jumped up and tried to bite other backups when they draw their gun, right? So he goes, why don't we set that up in the bark fence? So perfect. So the guys in the bite suits are pretending like they're drawing guns, you know, and if that cues the dog up, well, he gets in trouble for that. You know, he's not allowed to bite there. And then focus on this guy, this passive civil guy, and that's how you get paid. And the dogs really understand it. It goes really fast. Just usually for that kind of stuff, for me, it's just light e-collar, just tapping, not saying anything to the dog. Just tap on the e, let's go. It barks at the passive civil decoy. That guy pays him quickly.
Sure. And then, it's his behavior that got him in trouble. You don't have a thing to do with it.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And, but you know, we've really been speeding it up and are throwing decoys in there on the second session of this or third session of this. But I used to take more time doing it. I want to put a decoy behind the fence with the dog for 2 or 3 weeks. And when we did that, the dogs would rarely, rarely ever bite those decoys in the bite suits.
Right.
You know, And we'll throw a police vest on them and whatever, and make it look more like old uniforms over the top. But yeah, when you do it right, they understand. They know exactly, this is what I do. I bark at this guy and I get paid. And no matter how agitated I am, no matter how frustrated I am, no matter how pissed off I am, I cannot bite anyone except for that guy. Mm-hmm. And it really goes a long way. And on top of that, you know, I'm huge on verbal outs and having a clean out. We maintain the out during it. You know, right. And some people think that, and I was taught this way, that a verbal out's going to diminish your dog's bite and power. and I disagree with that. And I think if I can make the dog out when he's this frustrated, when there's this much emotion involved in the bite, then everything else is going to be easy. And, you know, we have the out established before we get behind the bark fence, but maintaining that out is important to me.
I would agree.
Me too. I would agree completely. That sounds like good stuff. So what is your all's training schedule like? I mean, you're riding the road, you got trainers, do you get 1 day a week, 3 days a week? What are you guys working on?
We have 1 day a week, 10 hours. We're pretty lucky we have that. But my guys are, you know, my unit are really motivated. I'm really spoiled. We track every night. Tracking's our big thing. So they're running training tracks every single night. And that's huge. Doing it every other week isn't enough. Doing it once a week, and we are lucky that we get a full 10 hours train every week. But you know, it's easy to go out and run a track, and you know, you can run a track yourself, you know, to an article or to a toy if you don't have anyone,
right?
Which, which is what most of our tracks are, to articles and toys anyways. But yeah, tracking's really big for us.
Well, I don't want to go off into the weeds. Where do you think the motivation comes from?
You know, I think people look at our agency, they look at canine as, not that many people want to do it. Put it that way. I think if you want an apprehension dog, you know that the dedication it takes and the amount of work it takes is very high, and that you have to put in work. So people that, they're not putting in for it. You know, the guys that are going to be lazy or aren't going to train or are not putting in for the job because it doesn't suit their needs. They'd rather look pretty and sit on a detail and, you know, downtown and talk to girls than go out and train dogs and get dirty.
I would agree. Yeah, I see things, you know, I've been doing this a long time. Certainly things wax and wane in terms of interest. And right now I feel like we're experiencing a little bit of a lull, and I know, because I've been around, I know that will change. The job hasn't changed. The quality of the dogs hasn't changed. It is hard work.
Yeah. And you guys train, right? So you guys are working. You guys, you've built a culture based on your training, and, you know, people from the outside see that. And so if you're going to come there, you got to be a worker, right?
Absolutely. And we're very fortunate here too. Our whole agency, all our in-progress felonies revolve around canine. It's a very, very strong canine culture. Like the way that every in-progress felony or, you know, recently delayed felony is handled revolves around canine. And so right from the start, as soon as the call comes in, patrolmen are setting up the call for canine. I mean, it's really what it is, because this is what we've done for years and it's worked. And we're not stuck in our ways. You know, if there was a better way to do it, and I tell every new guy that I teach how we handle these classes or how we handle these calls, if you come up with something better, we're all ears. You know, we're not stuck in this way just because we've done it for years and, you know, that's the way it is. It does work, but if there's something better, we're open for it.
So, you know, I'm just thinking how many dogs are prepared. And I would imagine this is done in Europe, just as it's done here, tying several dogs out, stimulating them in prey. Generally speaking, distance builds barking, and just allowing them to just bark, 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 bark. And then you roll down the line and you present a bite. And then you have the dogs that, as you have described, that they're just bark, 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 bark.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely happening. I mean, we used to do it. That's what we did for line agitation, three dogs at a time. And we'd run around like fools and the dogs were barking and rewarded for it over and over again. And back then we struggled with verbal outs. It was, you know, we made it through certification, but you know, we struggled with it. And looking back, I think that's part of the reason why we were just making chaos in the dog's head.
Right.
And we were mistaking that chaos for aggression. Instead, I believe with the bark fence, we're making true forward aggression and empowering the dog with these emotions and showing him that your forward aggression is not only going to get you what you want, but it's also going to keep you safe. And, you know, sometimes it might make the threat go away. Sometimes you get to bite it, and just empowering the dog, you know, aggression wins. Aggression is what, you know, whenever you feel fearful or you feel threatened or something new is presented, aggression is what gets you through it. You know, and that brings up another, you know, good point for the barking. Anytime we go to put a new dog into something new that he hasn't seen before, or even an experienced dog, and the dog seems a little unsure, well, we tell them to bark beforehand, and then they go into a whole nother mode, and then boom, then they're off to the races from there. I could go on and on talking about this. I hope I'm not boring you.
No, you're good.
Absolutely not. This is, you know, the feedback we get from the listeners is exactly what you're doing. They want to hear new techniques, stuff they've not heard. They want to hear different training, because it's, you know, you're like larger organizations are, you know, having trainers like Howard at your agency, that spoils people. Most agencies don't have what you have. So most of these guys and gals out here are starved for this information. So we want you to put it out, present it, and then, you know, link a way for them to contact you, you know, help them get better. Cause that's what we want to do. We want to build a better canine community, right?
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, nobody's a prophet in their own town, right? Sure. So, you know, anything new we introduce at the bark fence. Last night with the school I'm doing, or a couple nights ago, I wanted the dogs to bite through tarps. So we did it at the bark fence. First time I want to introduce legs, leg bites, we do it at the bark fence. First time I introduce muzzles, bark, 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 bark. Decoy moves around to the side of the bark fence. Boom, hammer, hammer. We're putting the dog in the right mindset before they go into anything new, to the point where they're just all fight, all forward aggression. So what we see with these leg bites is most of the time, these dogs go in and hammer the leg on the first time, and then they don't move. They're glued to that spot because they're not just biting it because it's the only thing they could get to. They're biting it with real emotion, you know, and that was one of the big proofs to me. Is our dogs used to some of them would bite a leg in training, no problem. But given the opportunity to get up to an arm, they may transfer. And so we would spend a lot of time training leg bites and never had any issues out on the street. The dogs would take legs and stay, hold, no problem. But in training, dogs felt more comfortable on the arm, some of them. But since doing the barking and introducing the legs this way, the dogs are going in on the leg or any part, and they're not moving.
I think you're creating some very powerful civil aggression through that fence, for sure. And definitely confidence as well.
I would agree.
Yeah, 100%. The dog knows exactly what's coming next.
Right.
And that's a big part of the job, is the dog, teaching the dog what to expect next.
Well, you know, in your training, when you can set up scenarios like you just talked about, every time that you've introduced that bark fence and something new, learning is taking place and the dog understands that.
Yes.
And it just makes you, you know, you and the dog successful much quicker, because he says, oh, we're getting ready to do something different, but the outcome's the same. Oh, yes. This is different. The outcome's the same. So it's very consistent, and it's really, really quite impressive.
So you're, what you have done with the bark fence, I like introducing the tarp, I do the same thing with a table. And now you've kind of given me another tool that I can explore with the bark fence, because we're going to go where we know he's super confident.
Right.
And we're going to throw a new element at him, like the tarp, which we did fairly recently too. And we'll do it incrementally, but we'll just take the tarp and put it over the surface that we want him to bite. And then maybe the next time we come out, the whole person is going to be covered in a tarp.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So nice. Very interesting. I wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned prosthetics, and I want to talk about it because we've had an arm and leg and arm, and I honestly had not really given it a whole lot of thought. I actually forgot that we actually had it. That belongs to the local sheriff's agency, and it's just been riding around the back of somebody's car. And I thought, you know what? I actually sat in on Mark Plunk's class as well when I was at HITS, and I thought, just like a hidden sleeve, to me, it's all how you set it up.
Yes.
You know, it's not a tool that you're going to use often. It's a tool that you can kind of use to proof, build, develop. So I wanted to set a situation up where we have the prosthetic low light sitting behind a door, and there's just the arm is present, just a little portion of the arm. And we've done it two times, and I've watched one of the dogs that we've had some questions about. I don't know how to describe it other than I could tell that when the dog bit the arm last night and got the reaction from the decoy, that the dog sensed that this was something different. This was real. Right. There was a guttural, I'm in this fight to win it. And this is not just biting equipment.
Right.
I got a real strong sense from the dog last night that felt real to him. So I think those things really have value, but they have to be set up properly.
Yeah, you have to set them up. Tons of value. And, you know, Steve Sprouse is from Broward County, which is the county that we're in. He's the one that makes arm and leg and, you know, phenomenal products. And I've been fortunate enough to learn from Steve a ton, and he still comes out to training and hangs out. And, you know, I'm always all ears for his input, just a wealth of knowledge. But he talks about the presentation is it's got to look real to the dog.
Right.
It's not about what we think is real. From the dog's perspective, it has to look, and he has to really believe it. There's so many little scenarios that work out perfect, like you talked about. The door cracked with the arm going across horizontally is a good one. A leg underneath the bathroom stall, you know, with the guy's other leg right behind it, looks very real. But yeah, I agree. The dogs, when they bite that for the first time, it's something different in their mouth. It's a different feeling, which is exactly why we do the tarps, right? We want them comfortable biting anything or any kind of material. but it also, it's a different feeling, and we want them to bite it and hold it. And, you know, I'm huge into negative punishment. If the dog bites it and lets go, well, then he's going back in the car and you lost your prey. You know, we'll start over again, come back out in 10 minutes and try again.
Right.
And most times they're going to hold it. But introducing in the bark fence for me is where we usually don't see an issue with dogs biting and then popping off. Cause like I said, anything you stick back there, they're going to hammer it. But if the presentation is bad, and we had this seminar I did a few weeks ago with Justin Rigney, if the presentation is bad, the dog can tell that it's not the man, especially experienced dogs, and thinks you're trying to trick him. Doesn't want to engage it because he's like, what is this toy here you're putting? I don't want to bite that. I want to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the presentation has to be right. It can't be obvious to the dog that you're holding on to something and your whole arm sticking out and it's not your actual arm.
Right.
So I've seen that happen, but super, just a great tool. And like Sprouse said, it's not the end all be all for everything.
Right.
Before prosthetics, we did tons of muzzles. That was how we tried to ensure that dogs would engage. That was our big thing. Now I'm, you know, and if something new comes out, I'm going to try it, you know, but muzzles, hidden sleeves, prosthetics, all of the above. And, you know, that kind of goes back to another benefit of the bark fence is these first engagements. You know, our first bites, there were some exceptional dogs that would go in and their first bite, they would, I don't want to say do damage, but they would be full on the guy. They would be all in on the bite, right? Most of the time, most dogs, their first bite on a real human, they would put teeth on skin, maybe get weirded out, maybe come off early, maybe not be all in on the bite. Guy might have some scratches. I remember senior handler telling me on my first bite, like, don't worry, they'll get better. And they did. They always got better, right? The second bite was a little better. The third bite was a little better. Now, with the bark fence, we're not seeing that. Like, the dogs are going in like those exceptional dogs.
Yeah,
full understanding, fighting with everything they have. And that's what we need to keep us safe. We can't have dogs going in and just
nip. There for the dog, though, right?
That's I'm sorry?
The whole premise behind your bark fence and what you're doing, you made it very clear to the dog how you get paid.
Yes. Yep. And what's happening next? What happens next after barking? And, you know, like I talked about, the barking goes away. So out on the road, I don't want my dog to bark before he goes into every bite. You know, that doesn't make sense. There may be a time when I do tell him to bark, or if I had a brand new dog right now and the situation was perfect, I may tell him to bark before I send him into bite, just to put him in the right mindset. But if you've done enough of the repetition and the dog understands odor means barking means biting, then when he gets an odor, the barking can go away. Like I talked about.
I really like it.
I
like it a lot.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, this is, you know, and like I said, I didn't come up with this, but I think this is what's missing in a lot of police canine training is this aspect of it. And there's just so many benefits to it. You know, Justin Rigney and I have been teaching all around the country, spreading it, and people, you know, usually we leave there and then they get a picture a couple of days later, hey, we built our own bark fence, you know, because people are seeing the value in it. And I've had dogs that came to me that wouldn't engage. And first thing I did was clean up their out, which is, I think, the opposite of what most people would want to do. Like, oh, this dog doesn't need an out. He has an in problem. I understand that, but let's make it clear when he can bite and when he can't bite. And then bark fence, you know, and, oh, shut him up and pray, clean up the out, bark fence, and then dogs go out and take care of business. I've had multiple dogs like that had failed engage, like literally standing on top of the guy, done that multiple times. And then a couple of weeks after bark fence, they go out and you know, bite with no problems. So it definitely is nice. And it's not just for new dogs. You know, you can retread any dog. Guys, I think, get intimidated by it when they see all these toys underneath the dog and guys in bite suits and their dog's not biting these guys in bite suits. And there's this passive decoy and they're barking and there's people yelling and screaming. And they look at it going, oh, my dog could never do that. But the system just works. Like, it happens. I think guys get blown away when we get their dog back there and they try to bite the decoy one time and we tap them on the E on a low level and they bark at the passive decoy and then we pay them right away. And next thing you know, the dog doesn't care about those decoys. And the guys are like, wow, I never thought I could do that. You know, that's amazing. But I think it's intimidating looking at it. And I think a lot of people look at it from the lens of, can I do that with my dog? And looking at it, I think a lot of people initially say no, but
right.
It's absolutely doable.
Yeah, I could see how you would have some naysayers for sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So how do people get a hold of you? I mean, I heard you say that you've been presenting this. I know there are going to be people that are going to want to do this.
Oh, awesome. Well, I appreciate it. I'm on Instagram. It's Eric Good, Eric with a K, Eric Good K9, the letter K, number 9. That's my Instagram. And then I'm on Facebook as well, Eric with a K. Or you can email me at eric@goodfamilyk9.com. That's my pet dog training business. So I'm available there, but I appreciate it.
Nice. Well, man, best of luck to everything that you're doing. It sounds great. We really appreciate you coming on this evening. Very, very happy to have you and great information.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's a great opportunity. Great talking with you guys.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll cross paths again here in the next year or so.
Yeah. Let's set something up.
Yep. Would love to have you come here.
I'm always looking for a reason to leave Florida. Especially in the summer.
Yeah, really. All right. Well, very good. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, Eric has left the building. Great episode. Great information. I really, really like what he's doing. I hope that, some people garnered some information from it.
Yeah, I think it's very, very effective and very powerful tool. I like it. I want to learn more about it. I don't want to try to just wing it. I want to see it done to fruition and like to give it a try myself.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, what bourbon, sir, do we have this evening?
Ezra Brooks Cask Strength sits on there.
Folks, this is a good bourbon. This is a reasonably priced bourbon. It's about $48 here in the great state of Kentucky. I don't know what it is in North Carolina, but
that sounds about right.
Very, very good. Very good bourbon. Good price. 120 proof.
Yep. So it's on the hot end.
It is.
We both have agreed that we both kind of like the higher proof
bourbon. Absolutely.
Kind of like the heat. So, yeah, this would be definitely one to keep on your bar for sure.
But it's not in your face heat either, though.
No, it's really not. It's not going to knock you down for sure. All right.
Well, my friend, as always, here's to season 2, episode 1, and the hair of the dog that bit you.
Thanks so much, you guys, for following along, supporting us, and listening to these wonderful conversations that Howard and I are just blessed to have each and every day. We'd like to thank and support all of our first responders, police, fire, EMS, and our military for once again holding the line, keeping us safe. Stay safe, brothers and sisters. We love you. God bless, and God bless America.